to episode 2 of Talk Central, South Africa's business technology podcast, brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. Thanks for joining us. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm the editor of Tech Central. I'm here with Candace Jones, deputy editor. Hi, Candace.
Hi, Duncan. It's been a quiet week this week, hasn't it?
Never a quiet week in this industry, it seems. Earlier this week, we actually were thinking it was going to be a quiet one, and then I think we must stop thinking that way, because then the news floodgates opened.
Indeed, they do.
Really quite a hectic one. First of all, I just want to say thanks to everyone who gave us some great feedback on the first episode that we recorded last week. We had some great inputs, generally positive feedback, and a few criticisms here and there, but really welcome inputs on how we can improve the show. I hope you'll find that we improve it incrementally each week. Particularly thanks to listener Alan Banneroff, who gave us some pertinent suggestions. Alan, the audio is a little echoey. If you were to see how we actually recorded this podcast, you'd be quite amazed at the quality is so good. We literally sit around a MacBook without even using microphones and just have a chat. But the idea is to improve the quality as we move on. We'll be getting some mics and the echo hopefully will be an issue of the past in the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned for that, and the audio experience should generally improve. Alan, thank you for pointing out last week we did get a little carried away with the acronyms and three-letter abbreviations when talking about some of the issues, particularly around digital terrestrial television. I think both Candace and I have been covering this issue for a while now, kind of talking acronyms on this issue, ISDBT versus DVB-T on DTT and all of these things. So thanks to everyone for the suggestions you've passed along. We'll definitely be trying to use fewer acronyms and less confusing terms and more plain English speech in this podcast. And the audio quality should also be improving as time goes on. But Candace, let's get kicked off with this week's news, and what a heck of a news week it's been. In fact, I think the news this week about Japan's NTT, the big incumbent telecoms operator in Japan, buying Dimension Data for 24.4 billion rand is not only the story of the week, but the story of the year, potentially.
Indeed, it's possibly one of the biggest foreign investments that we've seen in the country for a long time.
Certainly, I mean, this is, I would guess, this is the biggest, certainly in the ICT space, it's the biggest deal since the Vodafone, Vodacom deal, which saw Vodafone increasing its stake in Vodacom. And certainly it's the biggest investment, from what I can tell, by the Japanese, foreign direct investment by the Japanese into South Africa in its history. So really, really big deal. And I'm just amazed that the guys at Dimension Data managed to keep it quiet. I mean, they've been, I was chatting to Jeremy Ord, the chairman of Dimension Data and one of the co-founders this morning. And he said to me that they'd been negotiating this on and off for 3 years.
It is a surprise that it was kept quiet. Such a big deal doesn't often stay under wraps so long.
No, it doesn't, because
so
people always talk. I mean, the advisors talk. It always leaks somewhere.
Always.
But this one didn't come out. The first I got wind of it was at about Hopst 8 last night when a source sent me a message saying, watch sends early in the morning. Still, I didn't know what the full detail was. Jeremy said to me this morning that someone from Reuters phoned him at 6:30 just as he was about to step into the shower and said, is this deal true? Are you doing this? And he said to the Reuters journalist, I'm just getting into the shower. I will phone you back in a couple of hours. And of course, a couple of hours later, the deal had been announced. So they're incredible that they managed to keep it under wraps. But one heck of a deal. I mean, this is NTT, which owns Docomo, which is the big incumbent telecoms operator in Japan, formerly government-owned, now privatized. And it really seems to be part of this Japanese company's globalization strategy. And it's really quite exciting for the potential it offers to Dimension Data, and it's going to allow them to get into the Japanese market really for the first time. They've had a tiny office there previously, but it potentially could allow them to get access to these big Japanese companies like Sony, etc., and start to sell into those places.
But I think there's also some serious South African implications. You have more details. Tell us a little bit more about the possible competition it could bring to the local telecoms operators.
Yes, indeed. In fact, fascinating discussion, and I'll be teasing out the full story, the full interview over the next week or so, the interview I did with Jeremy Ord this morning at the campus in Bryanston. But Internet Solutions, a large player in the Internet service provider market here in South Africa, especially in the corporate space and in the wholesale space. There's some real possibility here that now that Dimension Data is part of a large global telco, arguably the second or third largest telco in the world, that we could see some significant investment going through IES to build network infrastructure and to start to take on some of the incumbent operators in the telecommunication space in South Africa. And in fact, Jeremy said to me today that they're quite excited about some of the technology that's being developed in the labs at NTT. As you know, Candace, Japan has always been ahead of the curve. They've tended to develop their own proprietary technology, but really interesting technologies, both in the fixed line and wireless space. I mean, Japan was well ahead of the whole 3G move that we saw in the rest of the world in the early 2000s. Back in the 90s, the Japanese were watching video on their cell phones through iMode and other technologies. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Dimension Data and Internet Solutions particularly take advantage of this technology and use this to roll out network infrastructure. Jeremy did indicate to me that it's likely that IS/Didata is going to bid for spectrum in the 2.6 gigahertz band, which is ideally suited for providing wireless broadband. So very exciting times indeed in the ICT space here in South Africa. I think the only downside of this deal for me is that Dimension Data is no longer going to be listed on the local stock exchange.
That was part of the deal, unfortunately. But there are other concerns around other international players doing similar deals and it not working out.
Yes, indeed. There are issues around. I mean, very clearly, these are two radically different cultures. You've got the Japanese culture. I've been trying to come up with a word to describe it today. I am struggling a bit, but it's a very sort of conservative, very honest, but very conservative approach to business. Dimension Data, on the other hand, has always been perhaps a little less in the last few years, but historically they've always been a very entrepreneurially driven organization. And I think that is going to be key to this acquisition and how they manage that integration. Jeremy did say to me that the Japanese have been very clear that they want Dimension Data to be continued to run separately to NTT. And they don't want to try and influence the culture of the organization. They really do want it to continue to run completely separately with its own management team. And in fact, they're only putting one person from NTT on the board of Dimension Data. Only one, which is quite incredible.
Yes.
That is going to be an interesting one to watch, but it sounds to me, based on the interviews I've done and listening to the conference calls with Brett Dawson, the CEO, and the president of NTT, that this is an issue that they have discussed at length and are very conscious of the fact that trying to force integration between two very separate cultures can cause these sort of deals to come unstuck. So I think they're approaching this in the right way. They've taken a long time, 3 years, to feel each other out and feel comfortable with each other. So let's hope it works.
Well, as you say, they have taken their time and they seem to have covered every base. And yeah, definitely exciting.
Yeah. Just as a pity, as I say, that a major component of the technology sector on our stock market is no longer going to be there. I mean, Didata for years has dominated the ICT sector on the JSE.
True, very true.
So, moving on, there's plenty of other news this week. Candace, you've been covering MTN, the news about MTN and its Black Economic Empowerment deal. Just tell us a bit more about what's going on there.
Well, it's finally happened. As you know, they were supposed to do it last year when they unwound one of the holding companies that the executive team set up to buy into MTN. It was then supposed to power into the BEE deal, but unfortunately the global economic crisis kept them from doing it, or so they said. But
that whole structure, that was the old new Shelf 664 structure that got unwound.
Yes.
And we don't know how much the guys made, but we presume that the CEO, Pitu Mhlekwa, and some of his fellow directors at MTN made an absolute fortune out of that deal.
The assumption is that, yes. Mm.
And then well deserved, I'd say, because, I mean, the executive management team, they just performed a sterling job over the last 10 years.
I mean, MTN is a well-oiled machine, and it really has proved its worth in the local market and across Africa. So, you know, there's no question that they deserved whatever payout they got for that. The BEE deal, however, is a big deal. It's considered one of the biggest deals the ICT sector has seen in terms of BEE.
It's 8.1 billion, right?
Yes.
And that's a bit bigger than the Vodacom deal last year, which was, 7.2.
Yeah. Okay. But the deal is basically an additional 4% equity in MTN, which brings its total equity stake to about 29.1. I'm still trying to figure out exactly how it brings the 29.1 to as the total. But what will happen now is that the MTN will build a company, a black investment company, where people of the public can buy in at 20 rand a share for a minimum of 2,000 rand.
Now that's that's 20 rand per MTN ordinary share, is it?
No, it's actually for the BIC share. The actual MTN share is 107 rand.
Okay, so there's not the offer isn't a massive discount to the prevailing share price.
No, not at the moment. No, okay. Which is I think at about 110.
Okay, now this deal will obviously give MTN the empowerment credentials it needs, potentially, to bid for the spectrum in the auction that's coming up in the 2.6 gigahertz band, the same spectrum auction that Dimension Data is interested in.
Indeed. The Department of Trade and Industry has set a minimum threshold of 30% equity for any business hoping to pitch for government business. And obviously, CASA has cottoned onto that and said they need 30% to enter the spectrum auction.
Mm.
So it does give them close enough to bid for the spectrum. How strict CASA will be on the 0.9%, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm sure Pitumba will find a solution if they really are keen to get access to that spectrum. Of course, some of the other players in the market. In fact, I had a conversation this morning with Lars Reichelt, the CEO of Cell C, and he indicated that he's not particularly happy with the terms and conditions that ICASA has set on the table. And in fact, Cell C may not bid for the spectrum either. Vodacom CEO Peter Ace has, of course, already indicated that he's also not happy. And unless the conditions that ICASA has set down are not just the BEE conditions, but other conditions as well, including the way the spectrum is being divvied up, which is not ideally suited for the LTE technology that the network operators want to deploy. LTE being the evolution of the 3G wireless standard. They've indicated, both operators have now indicated that if the terms and conditions don't change, then they may not actually bid for the spectrum.
Which is not a terrible thing either. I mean, it would be great to see faster networks, specifically on mobile data, but you're looking at the likes of Vox Telecom and the smaller guys going out for bigger networks.
It'd be great to have new competitors in this market. The only real worries there is do the smaller players have the capital needed to actually roll out this sort of infrastructure?
Especially considering they have only 2 years to roll out a basic network. And it has to have a certain percentage of coverage, which I can't remember the exact amount, but it's quite large, and a lot of people don't have the money to do that.
Mm. Yeah, it's a tough position that ICASA is in, actually. Do they open up the 2.6 gigahertz band to newer players to try and encourage competition, and then wait until the digital dividend spectrum in the 800 megahertz band becomes available in a couple of years, and give that to the incumbent mobile operators for the LTE technology, or do they give the spectrum in the 2.6 gigahertz now to the mobile operators? Given that we don't actually know exactly when the digital dividend spectrum will become available.
Well, yeah, with the broadcasters sitting on hold waiting for a decision on what standard to use to go ahead and roll out digital TV, there's no telling when the digital dividend will be available.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on, Candice, this week has seen an interesting development as well in the Department of Communications. Nyanda versus Motlhala, what's happening?
Well, as we spoke about last week, there's rumblings about the tensions between the minister and the DG, and that seems to have come to a head this week with an explosive report by the Business Day saying that the DG was on the verge of suspension. Nyanda came out swinging, saying it's completely untrue, and he did hint that there were several management issues at the DOC, but he didn't elaborate on what those are. The trouble is that having a solid, useful Department of Communications is better than having a divided one. But there has to be some sort of accountability, specifically when it comes to who's responsible.
It sounds to me, just talking to people who are reasonably familiar with the situation, that you've got two people here who are both very strong-willed in the minister and the director general, Mamadupi Motlhala. It could be a case of two strong-willed people coming up against each other and either being prepared to back down.
Well, that's what I'm hearing as well. Word is that Motlatla has she's a spitfire, and we can see that. We could see that when she came out swinging against the mobile operators in the interconnect debacle. And Neander's a general. He comes from a situation where he's, you know, used to being obeyed.
You listen to me. Yeah.
And you know, how do you balance that? It's a whole culture situation again. How do you balance those two personalities in a situation like that?
There is a lot of talk that Motlatla really has centralized power at the DOC, and that she's not very good at delegating, and that she wants to maintain control over every little aspect of the way the department is run, which I see the Mail and Guardian today suggested has led to a bit of a staff exodus at the department. So, I mean, this is problematic because the department and the ministry are dealing with some very important issues at the moment, which we don't want derailed. Until now, it actually seems that the department was making some really good progress, given what came before and the disastrous ministry of Ivy Matsepe Kasaburi, who I think was asleep at the wheel most of the time.
Absolutely. And that's something that I'll definitely be covering in my column on Monday. So have a look at that. But in the long run, I think these issues need to be resolved, and they need to come out and say, you know, exactly what's going on, and possibly find a detail a resolution how they're going to resolve that. But traditionally, the DG has always had more power than the minister in the Department of Communications.
And that's true.
And that's not just from the previous administration, but from before that as well. So to see the DG taking control in that respect is not a surprise. What is a surprise is that the minister is may well be clamping down on that.
Yeah, it'll be disappointing though, given all the allegations of corruption and tender fraud around Sipiwe Nyanda. It's really going to be unfortunate if that actually ultimately brings him down, because as the political leader of this department, he does actually seem to have done a reasonably good job. Certainly, he's done a very good job relative to his predecessor, and it will be disappointing if he goes now, because he does seem to be sorting out some of the problems that existed.
Absolutely.
What else happened this week, Candace? Telkom Telkordia settlement, that was quite interesting. $80 million that Telkom's going to have to fork out to this, is it Canadian or US
software developer? US software developer, now, Telkordia.
This goes back almost a decade, I think, to the days. I seem to recall that SBC, the American company, which morphed it into AT&T, awarded this contract to Telkordia back in the day, back in 2000, 2001. And it's been in dispute, and it's been to the High Court, and it's been to the Supreme Court of Appeal, and Telkom managed to whittle the number down, but then it went up again because of interest accrued, etc. What's happened here?
Well, it's a 9-year dispute. Basically, about 9 years ago, Telkom awarded a customer service system contract to Telkordia, which it began implementing. And about 2 years later, 2 years into a 3-year contract, Telkom cancelled the contract, saying that Telkordia had not delivered on its mandate, basically saying that some of the functionality that was supposed to be implemented wasn't. Telkordia then disputed the matter. It ended up before an arbiter, and the arbiter actually upheld Telkordia's claim to, I think, $128 billion.
Million.
In eventual interest, which then Telkom took to the High Court, and then to the Supreme Court of Appeals, both of which upheld Telkordia's claim. And they have now settled on an amount of $80 million, which...
And they made provision for this in their final results, the 2010 annual results. I think the provision was for $77 million, and it ended up being around $80 million in total. They haven't, though. When I was chatting to Peter Nelson, the now outgoing CFO at Telkom, he indicated to me that they have not made provision for a number of other potential liabilities that they're facing, including a range of lawsuits from companies like Meridi Telecoms and from Tuma Networks. One hopes that this $80 million payout that they've had to make this week is not going to be repeated again and again over the next couple of years.
Well, bear in mind, Duncan, that both Petuma, the new claims are very new, and they'll probably take as long, if not between 5 to 10 years, to resolve So Telkom still has time to put away that money if it comes up against them.
True. But let's one hopes. Of course, we didn't even put this on the list. The other big news of the past week was the fact that Peter Nelson has stepped down and we have a new CEO at Telkom. So, big developments. In fact, we did cover that last week.
It feels like last week.
It was last Friday. We did cover it in the last podcast. So let's not go over that ground again. The other news this week, and we had it exclusively on Tech Central, is that Cell C is on the verge of selling its stake in Virgin Mobile.
Indeed, big news.
They of course, have 50% of Virgin Mobile, with Richard Branson's Virgin Group owning the other 50%.
Absolutely.
This deal's been coming for quite a while, but the negotiations have now been finalised, and the matter's going to be referred or passed on to the Competition Commission for approval in the next few days, I believe.
Absolutely. But Duncan, you picked up on something interesting. A new Blue Label at some point was involved, but they say they're not involved anymore. But who do you think it's going to?
They're not involved anymore. Yeah, when I spoke to Brett Levy, the co-CEO, he indicated to me that they did have some initial discussions with Cell C about purchasing the stake, but they decided against it for whatever reason. But the talk in the market now is that there's an unnamed mobile handset distributor that is interested in purchasing the 50% stake. So it's going to be interesting to see what that company's strategy is and what they plan to do with Virgin Mobile. But I suspect that Virgin Mobile may actually be in a stronger position and perhaps freed up to compete more aggressively with the telecommunications operators now that it's freed of Cell C. I think Cell C probably exerted a bit of a controlling hand on it, preventing it from doing some of the things that it wanted to.
Well, it's reminiscent of Telkom, Vodafone, and Vodacom, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
On a far smaller scale.
Mm. Mm.
But Virgin would never have been in a position to compete directly with Cell C as its owner.
Yes.
It's almost impossible. And that's exactly what we saw with the Vodacom, with Telkom and Vodafone owning it 50-50. Mm. Makes for a very difficult sort of partnership unless there's some freedom to move.
Mm. Mm. Good. Lastly, the other big story of the week was news about Leo Baxter, very well known in the IT industry.
Absolutely.
He's sold his 45% stake in the company he co-founded with Mike McGrath, MB Technologies, which is one of the largest companies in South Africa by revenue, not so much by profit because they're a low-margin IT distributor, but one of the country's biggest, certainly one of the probably the top three biggest unlisted or private companies in South Africa. Why is Baxter selling out now?
Well, as you know, in about 2007, Baxter was injured quite severely in a polo accident, and he was paralyzed. Since then, he's been going through some rehab and working on surgeries and so on and so forth, and has started to regain movement in his arms.
He was paralyzed from the neck down, wasn't he?
Yes, as far as I know, yes. But he's decided that it's time to head off and concentrate on his recovery, which looks imminent.
Good. Well, that's good to hear.
It's excellent news. Investec will be taking up his 45% stake, but he will stay on the board, not as chairman, which he was, but he will stay as a non-executive director. He will also provide input to the company as and when it's needed.
Okay, good stuff. Great. Well, I think that's about all the time we have for this week's show. As mentioned in the first show last week, we want to try and keep this as short as possible, keep it a short, punchy business show. Thanks for listening. And again, if you have any feedback on the show that you'd like to give us, both positive and negative, as long as it's constructive, please send us an email, info@techcentral.co.za, or leave a comment in the comment section below the post on the website. Thanks again for listening, and remember to check out techcentral.co.za for all the latest South African business tech news. And from myself and from Candice, have a great week. Thanks. Bye-bye.